P.S. I Love Hoffman is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
So this week we have Ides of March, a film I really enjoy. I'm excited to talk about.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it too. This was like one of those early movies, not in Ryan Gosling's career, but one of those movies that made me go, oh, this isn't just like this guy that's from The Notebook, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's like, it's a really cool version of the Gosling that we all know.
He had almost the same transition, not that like Matt Damon started with like a romance like The Notebook, but you know, there's like, I think they even say it in what, 40-Year-Old Virgin, like I thought he was such a Streisand, and then I saw Born Identity.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, so it's like, no, Gosling has like between Drive and then just like, I mean, now obviously everyone knows.
Yeah,
Gosling.
I mean, we even have a show on our network, not us, but
yes,
on the Cage Club network, cageclub.me.
That's
Cage
.me.
Yes, cageclub.me. It's called Boyfriend Material.
Yeah, Gosling wouldn't make a great boyfriend in this movie.
No, probably not.
No.
what are your? I mean, I know this is a Philip Seymour Hoffman podcast, but what are your top Gosling films?
Well, definitely Drive. Drive is just up there as one of my favorite films of all time. Love Drive.
Drive guy.
Drive was one of the last movies I went in, or not even last, but like rare times I went into a movie knowing nothing about it. Hadn't seen
You're a big trailer guy. You're a big,
yeah,
like,
I'm a big
background info.
Our guest today
spoiler.
Is not a big fan of, no, I try to stay away from spoilers, but sometimes I do spoil myself. If you want to stay away from spoilers, sure, there's people.
Sometimes you also do soil yourself.
No. Never have. Never.
Well, not even as a child? What
that, no, that, no, that's different. No, as an adult.
No, I digress. No, I hear you.
Yeah.
So Drive, you went in cold turkey.
Yeah, and what a delightful surprise that was. One of my favorite, Oscar Isaac. I know that's one of our favorites.
I love Oscar Isaac. I love me some Oscar Isaac.
But then I'll go and I'll throw a little Remember the Titans, even though it's totally not like a Gosling movie.
Okay, Remember the Titans.
Yeah.
Those are your two favorite?
No, Crazy Stupid Love.
Crazy Stupid Love. I do enjoy that movie too.
Yeah. Who are you, Steve Jobs? Are you in a fraternity, Cal?
Always bother me that he's eating Sbarro pizza, but whatever.
But that, you know what? But that's California. That's what you have to recognize. Even as perfect as he is, he's Mr. California in that movie.
La La Land, speaking of California. Fan? Not a fan?
I like it. It definitely, you know, I don't know. It falls into that category, like, what was that? The Artist, right? The black and white,
yeah,
movie. La La Land falls, while it's great that it's like an original musical, it definitely got like its, well, it didn't end up winning Best Picture. That was the famous, like, you know, mistake of last year. Moonlight won it. But it definitely still got more love than I think it necessarily
but
or technically deserved.
Still,
no, I still liked it, and I love jazz, so it's cool that he's like a jazz musician.
What about White Man Saves Jazz, as a lot of people say?
Sometimes it doesn't matter the color of your skin, you save something.
What about
John Legend's in it, and John Legend is a more successful jazz musician in that movie. So
what other Gosling movies are out there? Place Beyond the Pines. Do you like that one?
I like the first two acts in that movie, and he's in the first act a lot, so
you like the Gosling parts.
I like the Gosling moments of that. Yeah,
gotcha.
How about you?
The other ones I was thinking of are Lars and the Real Girl.
Yeah. No, the more I think about them, The Nice Guys.
Oh, The Nice Guys. Yeah,
Shane Black directed a movie, Russell Crowe's in it. Like, Gosling has fantastic... He's the ultimate threat. He's, like, beautiful, he's smart, he's funny.
We even mentioned Blade Runner.
The new Blade Runner. But we've got him today with our main man. So.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, yeah. So a little crossover from the network. And I mean, yeah, just, I mean, more power to those guys. It's an awesome actor to do a show on, and, you know, I'm happy for them, and I can't wait to listen to their episodes going forward.
Yeah, check it out on cageclub.me. That's .me.
Iggy Pop! Amen! Let it rock!
I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Truman Capote.
Why don't you have some fun?
Fun, fun.
Tommy,
that's a paycheck.
Whoever she is, I'm going to find her and I'm going to hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish.
I'm always home. I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Hey Haw fans, welcome to this week's edition of the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm Kyle Reinfried.
We're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to talk great movies. Well, Kyle, thank you for your beautiful name reading. That was always lovely. I think the favorite part of everyone's P.S. I Love Hoffman experience, hearing your
name. I think
so,
because they know that I'm going to be on this episode. That's what they have to look forward to.
You are once again my guest on the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much.
No, I'm kidding. But we do have a returning guest today for an awesome film that I've been looking forward to speaking about. The film is Ides of March, and our guest is Dan Pichel, returning again. Dan.
Hey, folks. How are you?
What's up? What have you been up to?
Last time you guys just talked to me, I was working for Billmore Magazine, and I went crazy. And moved 180 miles away to
where?
Pennsylvania. I am.
That's the state of in which our character is governor.
Yes. Actually,
it's important state when it comes to politics.
Yes, a swing state. Could that have been your reasoning? Were you influenced to try to kick one over to the right?
No, I moved to the most Republican area in the state. I'm in Amish country in Lancaster County, not Lancaster, Lancaster. I got yelled at many times.
Wow. I didn't know that.
No, it's a thing. I moved out here for a job at Penn State.
So nice.
Good old Sandusky territory.
Whoa.
Not a job like that.
Although I am very excited. It's becoming a thing now with the new movie with Al Pacino.
Wait, he's playing Paterno or Sandusky?
He's playing Joe Paterno.
Okay.
Yeah, he plays Joe Pa.
Is it a Joe Paterno film or is it
it's called Paterno. It's all about Joe Paterno. Joe Paterno is still like, I mean, I'm not on the center campus. I'm at University Park. I'm at a satellite campus in Harrisburg.
Gotcha.
But I mean, Joe Paterno is still like a god out here. They have actually, you may not know this, but Penn State has its own ice cream. They own a dairy farm, and they actually
what's it called? I knew it all along. Ice cream?
No, it's called.
You're alienating our Penn State base.
Yeah, no, sorry. No. Listen, there are millions of Penn Staters out there.
I know.
Yeah. But
they really would get offended.
It's called the Berkey Creamery. It has the greatest ice cream I've ever tasted in my life, and they have a flavor named after Joe Paterno, Peachy Paterno.
Okay. I mean, you're right, Kyle. Though it is a recipe for some kind of humor, but we'll keep that away.
Creamy. The word creamy.
I wasn't asking for it. I was just saying. I know my brother went to the University of Maryland, another Big Ten school, though recent Big Ten school, and they also have a dairy with their own ice cream. So
I mean, it's a real like. I feel like I've joined this giant army of people, and it's like it's such like an intense culture, and it's really cool. I mean, Penn State's just like an awesome school as is, and that's not just because they pay me. There's a lot of really cool stuff here, much better than New York is a bit of a shithole, not gonna lie. Very happy.
Wow,
to be out.
Now you're alienating our much larger New York base. So
yes,
Dan Pichel, stop with that.
Well, listen, they can come find me.
I don't think they'll want to.
I'm a mile down the road from a sheep farm.
What do you do with those sheep?
We can neither confirm nor deny any stories.
Well, you're talking kind of in the language of our film now, Ides of March.
Yes.
So we have you on because you are a political man. You've worked on campaigns, and you're also a political junkie.
Not so much recently, but I was a candidate. I was the youngest candidate in the state of New Jersey when I was 22, and I was the youngest candidate to run and the youngest candidate to lose. So I also served as the executive director of the Passaic County Regular Republican Organization, which is a lot like being the president of the college Republicans at Yale University. I think that's pretty much how effective I was.
But you got in the mud with the elephants, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Cool. Yes, I did. There you go. I've been the fighters. I never got so high level to the cop. I dealt with small town nobodies. I never worked on any congressional races, partly because I hate most congressmen. I did a lot with county races, local races, the nitty gritty. I never got involved in the high level, high stakes stuff like this film.
Yeah, this is what the Democratic primaries or the Ohio. What is it exactly?
The Ohio Democratic primary. Yeah.
Yep.
So Dan, we had you on for The Party's Over, another political Philip Seymour Hoffman film. You were not on. Michael Manzi was on for Charlie Wilson's War, but we consider this the third of the Hoffman political trilogy.
Yes, you're completing the ice cream sandwich.
The ice cream sandwich of the political stuff.
Yes. So thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Had you seen this movie before?
Yeah. No, I didn't see it when I came out. I seen it because I guess I never go to. Theaters, but I really saw this one a while back. This came out in 2015. Yes.
No. 2011.
No.
2016. 2011.
2011.
Oh, really? Well, then I must have saw it in 2015. I guess it's been a while.
That's okay. And Kyle, you'd seen this before.
I might have seen this in theaters, but I've definitely seen it a handful of times since. It's got Daddy Goss in it.
Ryan Gosling, yes. Yeah. This is a film I've seen a lot. It's a favorite film of mine. I mean, it's something that when we were talking about this podcast, I was really excited to talk about because it just we'll get into it. Kyle, why don't you tell everybody, if they haven't seen The Ides of March, what it's about?
All right, let's see how much I can butcher this. Stephen Myers is an idealist in the world of politics. In the middle of the Ohio primary for the Democratic presidential nominee, Stephen's actions take him down a path that shows the dirtier side of politics. There we go. Figured that kind of sums it up.
Would you call him an idealist?
I think in the beginning, yeah, he's definitely idealist. Like, everyone's... Like, between, like, Marissa Tomei, not really our main man, Philip Seymour Hoffman, but then also Paul Giamatti's character. Yeah, he's definitely, like, he's shown to be, like, not naive, but just idealist and very much believing in this candidate, so...
I mean, I'll have to disagree with you there. I wouldn't call him an idealist. I think he's a little bit more... he's less jaded than the other people on the campaign. But he's not an idealist, because even before all the shit goes down, he's trying to convince his candidate to take Jeffrey Wright's delegates.
Well, I actually kind of fall kind of in the middle on this one. Let me kind of put it this way, because... I've been in his place before, right? Now, here's a quick question before I kind of go into it. Brian and Kyle, have you ever kind of like believed in somebody, like put your trust in somebody so fully they can do no wrong in your eyes?
Not to the extent of like what you're asking now.
Well,
I'm not going to include like. Any family members and
yeah, no, that no, I'm not yeah, not family members, but just like, have you ever believed in somebody so much that you'd be willing to put all your effort, all your devote your life to that person and their cause?
Up until I was 8 years old, I'd say Santa.
Well, yeah, yeah. but see, like that.
What about The Rock, Kyle?
No, it's still not even The Rock. I love Dwayne Johnson.
that to me is like. Is kind of what at its heart is this to me. This is what this movie is about. Because I've been there, right? Like when you're involved in a campaign, you don't sleep. You put forth all this time, all this effort. You sacrifice everything, and ultimately, it's an idea. And in our system, that idea is always wrapped up in a person. So that's why I think like Ryan Gosling's character, I can really identify with because, yeah, he is an idealist. Because he believes that this one guy, he believes that George Clooney can save us all. He willingly believes that this is the right guy, this is the right moment, and he has to get this guy elected, and he's willing to overlook so much because he believes in that higher idea. You know, so he's not an idealist in the sense of he is married to an idea. That idea is a person and a human being, and he's willing to do anything to make sure that human being succeeds, because ultimately he thinks that's the truth, right?
Yeah, well, in the beginning, I mean, it's much more, like, simple. Like, he thinks this man can do no wrong, and he is, like, the better choice, and he'll make the world a better place. But by all means, in the beginning, like, I mean, it's just a great character. All really great character introductions, which is always, like, one of my favorite things to a film. And just his whole exchange of the podiums and everything like that. He's like, no, it'll make him look like a hobbit, like the other candidate. Like, you know, I mean, so it's not like he's an idealist also in the sense that he's not going to play, like, a little dirty himself. But then, obviously, as the film unravels, he becomes much more, again, like you said, Brian, jaded.
Yeah, I think he's optimistic, but I think that first scene right there says he's not an idealist, because I feel like an idealist would be like, nope, our candidate is taller than this guy, it doesn't matter, he's great, he'll come out, you know. But regardless, that's but semantics.
His goal is to get this guy elected, because that's his idea. His ideal. Let me rephrase.
I guess you're right.
That's his ideal. You know, when we think of idealists, we think of someone who's a slave to an idea. But an idea can be a person, right? So yeah, he has to play the game, and he's been doing it. You know, they set him up as this, like, you know, it's kind of typical, kind of like your, like, spaghetti Western type character. Like, this is the greatest guy in the world who at his job, right? He's, like, mystical, and, you know, he's perfect, and he does everything perfectly. You know, he's, like, he's the ultimate thing. So he is an idealist, but his idea is a human being that he is committed to. If that makes any sense, or if I'm just...
No, it makes sense. No, I hear you. So, obviously, our guy, Philip Seymour Hoffman, plays a really awesome role, I think. Paul Zara, who's the head of Governor Morris's campaign.
Yeah, so you've got, Governor Morris, and then it's a senator from Arkansas, right?
Yeah, Pullman. But so Ryan Gosling, as you mentioned, plays... he's our lead, really. He plays Stephen Myers. I guess he's number two to Paul Zara on the campaign.
Yes. I think his role... If Philip Seymour Hoffman is campaign manager, he's like the deputy campaign manager.
Yeah, and he's just like this young, up-and-coming, very media-savvy guy. George Clooney is the candidate. Paul Giamatti, like you mentioned, who I love. Like, I love this cast. It's Tom Duffy. He runs the rival campaign. Yeah,
it's one of the better casts we've had, I think.
Yeah, not that we've had bad. We've had great casts.
Oh, yeah, but still, it's just up there. Just
Evan Rachel Wood, who's Molly. Very pivotal character. One of your favorites, Tomei. Kyle. Say that again?
Yeah, Marissa Tomei.
Yeah, one of your favorites, Kyle. Jeffrey Wright. Who's Thompson?
Yeah, we got a bit of a Westworld
with Evan Rachel Wood and Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah.
Though I don't think they share a scene in this film.
No, they do not. Jeffrey Wright has very little to do in this film.
But he's good. I think he's really good in his scenes. Like, he's like he's what I think of a politician, honestly.
Definitely. Yeah. So, George Clooney is George Clooney.
George Clooney, and we should mention he's like the director, producer. He's pretty much everything. This film takes place in Cincinnati largely because he's from like the Kentucky Cincinnati area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is his baby.
Up there. This is up there as far as, I mean, he's a really decent director. He's not a great director, but he just knows storytelling. I mean, he definitely gets some pretty great people in his movies. I mean, I'd say between this and Good Night and Good Luck, you know, those are some, like, this, and this is actually, out of all his films, the only, like, it took place in modern day. All his
other
I like The Good German. The Good German was pretty good.
Someone did that recently on Cage Club. Was Charlize Theron in that?
Isn't Soderbergh also? Isn't that Soderbergh film?
That's a Soderbergh film?
Oh, it's a Soderbergh film? I thought that was him. Huh. More you know.
Wait, maybe it's not. Maybe
No. Charlize Theron's in it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was on Watch the Throne.
Yeah.
Yeah, I meant to listen to that episode. But yeah, you can catch that one on cageclub.me, obviously.
I do have to say, you got the pun game in this podcast group. It's pretty on point. I gotta give you guys some credit.
Kyle likes his puns, and I think the rest of the network does as well.
That's Brian saying he doesn't care about titles.
No, it's not that I don't care about titles. I don't care about punny titles.
Well, actually, speaking of titles, let's if I may segue, if you don't mind. I love the title of this.
So that was my question. This is based on a play called Farragut North.
Yes,
and I think
mentioned several times in the movie.
Yeah, because like a play would, you know. But the play is by Bo Willimon, yes. who was the original showrunner for House of Cards. So he and I think Clooney and some other people who did the rewrite were nominated for the Oscar for this. And kind of off this, he got to be the showrunner for House of Cards. I mean, I'm talking about, obviously, the American Kevin Spacey. Sorry, cursed name now, but Kevin Spacey, House of Cards. So, I mean, you kind of, like, see where that can come from. House of Cards
is, definitely.
A very extrapolated version of this. But, again, so they changed it for film to be Ides of March, which, of course, Dan Pichel, would you like to tell the audience what the Ides of March is, if they don't know?
Well, I mean, if you don't know, I suggest you should turn this podcast off and go to bed because it's way past your bedtime. You haven't but by the off chance, if you don't know what the Ides of March is, I mean, it's like, you know, it's the day that Caesar dies, right? So, I mean,
not just dies.
Well, gets assassinated.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly.
I mean, and a lot of it, times. Like the Ides of March, comes from the Caesar. I mean, the Shakespeare play more than anything else. You know, there's always stories about, but it's the day where Caesar, you know, puts on his toga and heads to the Senate for the last time, and was killed by the senators and his best friend, Marcus Junius Brutus.
Brutus.
Mark Anthony, no. Friends, Romans, countrymen. You need to get him back to high school. Come on, what are you talking about?
Mark Anthony's a Puerto Rican singer. Very talented, but not related to this. Kyle, come on.
Are you sure?
I'm kidding. No, but okay, so do you guys... why do you think they changed the title, I guess, is my question.
It's got a bit more... I mean, so what's... It's referenced several times, but I didn't write it down. What's the original title?
I said it, Farragut North.
Yeah. I don't know. That doesn't have any... That means nothing to anybody. And obviously, some people don't know what the Ides of March is, but it just has... I don't know. It leads a bit more to the mystery, and obviously, when you know that there's going to be betrayal. It's a bit more Hollywood name, and I think it's, a smarter title in a way, so...
Well, I think it's two things. One, the primary that they're working towards is on March 15th. So, you know, there's your main there's your literal connection. But if you want to go for like more of a subtext, I think in a lot of ways, as someone who like is obsessed with Julius Caesar, there is a lot of Caesar-like tendencies to Clooney's character. Caesar was famous for being the ideal man, the ideal, you know, the fair and honest leader, and it was completely whitewashed by history as this great figure who was killed by a bunch of selfish, you know, evil, corrupt politicians. So I think that's, but if you really look into the Shakespeare play, which I think where a lot of the heavy-handedness comes from, is Caesar becomes a tyrant, and he wears a white toga, right? Now, believe it or not, small note aside, toga literally politician is man who wears white. That's what the literal translation of politician is. I'm just rambling here, but I think it has a lot to do with making parallels of the fall of Caesar to George Clooney. George Clooney is Caesar, and he is the ideal person who's being. You know, who really isn't on the outside. We see him as this wonderful, you know, clean politician, but deep down he's really just a rotten tyrant.
I mean, that's fair. It's not like he's brought down. He's kind of just manipulated. But no, I agree. It's a great title. I do like the Farragut North title though as well. I mean, but I think it's too nerdy, if you will.
Well, let's also just be honest here. Ides of March is going to sell a few more tickets than Farragut.
No, that's what
exactly.
I mean.
Yeah, that's the more Hollywood title. Yeah, definitely.
But we're supposed to get in deep on our analysis here, all right? Money. These are artists. They don't count of fickle things like money when making a film.
But Farragut North, of course, is a subway stop in the D.C. Metro by K Street, where all the consulting firms are, and that's like kind of, I don't know. My brother went, like I mentioned, went to University of Maryland, which is right by D.C., and this is like a movie me and him always quote. Just whenever I'm in that city and I pass the Farragut North, like, metro stop, I just hear it from Philip Seymour Hoffman's voice.
Who almost wasn't in this movie originally.
Oh, do tell.
It was almost by George Clooney's longtime friend Brad Pitt almost played the role of Paul Zara.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That would have just been too many pretty people. Nothing against Philip Seymour Hoffman. You know I love the Hoffman. But, like, between George Clooney, Brad Pitt, and Ryan Gosling, like, you know.
Well, this is in his extra... I mean, not that he ever was, like, a pretty boy, but this is in his extra fat and disgruntled kind of phase.
Yeah, we were just talking about that in all our previous episodes, how big he is at this point in his career. Like, literally, I mean.
I'll be honest with you. I've worked with a lot of, like, campaign consultants and, you know, people who do this for a living, people who make politics their living, and they all look like Philip Seymour Hoffman. They're all fat. They're all miserable. Well, the good ones are. The pretty ones are, like, you know, the activists who are just doing this to, you know, add the resumes. But the really good ones, the really success ones, look like Philip Seymour Hoffman and Paul Giamatti. They're rough around the edges. They chain smoke.
Paul Giamatti.
They chain smoke. Just like he. This was, like, in my experience, like, that. The best part about this movie was Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, because it's so true, and it's so, and also the way the character is written. Well, we can get into that, but I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, let's talk about it, because I think he just, like, this is where he just kicks ass, you know?
Definitely. This is where just, like, all these years, all these roles, again, like, so he's had a lot of leading roles at this point, but now we're kind of getting into this territory where he's just taking these great, like, whether they're, it's part of, like, an ensemble, or even just, like, a small, like, a, you know, just, like, two scenes kind of thing.
They're character roles.
Yeah, just really great character roles, and he just adds so much authenticity to this film.
It feels real. It's funny because he just was in Moneyball with Brad Pitt, and Brad Pitt almost played this role.
Yes.
It feels more real when Hoffman plays these kind of roles than theoretically Brad Pitt.
Yeah, I mean, just in that, I mean, well, we're not, we talked about Moneyball already, so I won't go back to that, but I mean, that's just, it's just a great role for him, and he always also plays a really great mentor in a handful of, you know, like a handful of films. So this is just another, like, when we get to the final, like, just the, like, two last scenes between Philip Seymour Hoffman and Ryan Gosling. I mean, they just hit that much harder because the relationship between them is believable, and it just means a lot more.
Those are my two favorite scenes in the whole film. The last two scenes with him and Ryan Gosling.
Uh-huh, 100%. I mean, I couldn't agree more. Though Gosling as this pretty boy, I mean, I know, Kyle, you really like Ryan Gosling. We have a whole show on our network about Ryan Gosling. I love Ryan Gosling, too. But, like, his little, like, I love his fucking, just the way he delivers lines to me, it's just so, like...
He just, like, doesn't come off as Canadian ever.
No, because he invented his own accent.
He really did.
He's no, he just did. Like, that's a real thing. When he was, like, breaking out, he decided that he would invent his own accent to kind of distinguish himself in Hollywood, and it fucking worked.
Yeah, it's almost like a, like, 19, like mid 20th century, like, East New York accent or something.
Yeah,
yeah. I like when he says, are you Bearcat? You know, like, he just, like, boom,
yeah.
The way.
Are you a big, yeah. He just, you know, just, like, I mean, we'll go, I mean, just quick say, like, one of my favorite rom-coms of all time, Crazy Stupid Love, and he's just like, how about you, Fancy Face? Just like, like, it's just like things like Fancy Face just sounds like, yeah.
So Kyle, I heard a rumor, uh-huh. I heard a rumor once that on certain dating profiles uh-huh. that you had in the past, that you've referred to yourself as the chubby Ryan Gosling. Oh, yeah,
that's not even just, like, not even on dating, but that's, like, a go-to in-person line, you know, just, like, nothing is like me. Like, when I'm like, hot on a date, like, the quips coming out, like, I'm not, like, that's not, I'm not saying that's all the time, but, like, when I'm on, like, a good, like, you know, little flirting role, I'm a chubby Ryan Gosling.
Okay. I just wanted you to confirm or deny that. I wanted it on the record.
Yeah. I'm not afraid. You're my Ida. I will share with you.
Kyle, I remember when you first saw this movie and we were talking about it. You said you were a little afraid because George Clooney is a well-known, and Dan, I know you'll chime in on this. George Clooney is a well-known, like, left wing person.
Wow, good memory. I know where you're going with this, yeah.
And you were afraid of watching this, that it was just going to be like, paint the Democrats as like the party of truth and reason and for like the people, and the Republicans as like the snakes. And I remember you saying you were happy that that was not the case in this.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. It's just like, so, I mean, it ends up being obviously this sex scandal that, you know, is in the, you know, the crux of George Clooney's character, so that just, I mean, we'll go back to Bill Clinton for that good old one, but you know, I just, who says, is it Paul Giamatti, right, that says Republicans are meaner, tougher, more disciplined, you know, like, I mean,
yeah, that's his get in the mud with the elephants thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm, you know, I don't want to get into our current political climate. So that was a comment I made back in, I guess, in 2011, 2012, when there was still, I don't know, Republican Party, you know, if you're a Democrat listening to this right now, obviously you would never agree with it, but there used to be, like, a good Republican Party.
I mean, they nominated the most nicest guy in the world on 2012, and they still made him look like an asshole, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, I love Mitt Romney, but, like, I think one really cool thing about George Clooney's character is they tried to make him a bit cliche, I guess, from what I tell. It's like, oh, this is your typical, you know, Democrat. He cares about all the environment and all this. Like, he took a lot of cliche points, but watching it again in 2018, it's like he was Bernie Sanders.
A little better looking than Bernie Sanders.
But like, you know, like,
not if Bernie not Sanders as, not like, as radical as Bernie Sanders, though. Bernie Sanders is pretty radical.
Well, it's like, you know, the politics was like, it was like he was a generic Democrat, right? And I think that was a conscious choice on his part. He was like, he's not making a movie to make Republicans or Democrats look bad. They're making a movie to make all politicians and make this whole game that we play every 4 years look ridiculous.
And I 100% appreciate that. Like, it's so I'm glad you would agree with that too, as a hard R, as with the lesson you taught us last time, Dan.
Yes, hard R.
Which, for people that didn't, but you should go back and listen to the parties over the last episode Dan was on. A hard R is a strong,
someone who will reliably vote for Democrats. We in political consulting, you judge voters as how they, like, a cycle is 4 years, right? Because you have your presidential where everyone votes, you have your midterm where half the people vote, and then you have the two off years where no one votes. So you can kind of guess and make your assumptions through your data. So a hard R is what you call a 4 of 4 Republican voter. So you're a registered Republican, you voted 4 out of the last 4 times. A hard D would be someone who voted who's a registered Democrat who voted 4 out of the 4 times, last four
yep.
times.
Yep. So you're a hard R. Let's get into stuff you want to talk about the film.
I would just to point out, I would never vote for George Clooney's character. Let's just get that straight.
I figured. But okay.
I respect how they made it less about, this is a brilliant, this is a great man. Like they said, you know, a lot of the stuff is they tried to make him out to be this great man, and a lot of the characters refer to him as this great man. I mean, they have the Obama, you know, mock-up posters and all that to kind of get that kind of cult of personality going. But they didn't really say he's a great man because of his politics. He's a great man because he's a, you know, true and honest politician. And I appreciated that while watching the movie, that they didn't try to, like, smack me over the head with a message.
No, absolutely. Like, he's the left-wing dream candidate, and it shows that he has one of the most famous flaws, and it's quoted later in the film, like the "don't fuck the intern" thing.
Well, that just seems to be a Democrat thing. You know? But then, well, again, Republicans get caught in bathroom stands for gay prostitutes. So hey,
I was going to say some of those were interns too.
Who am I to judge?
Whatever happened to Chandra Levy, right?
We don't talk about that.
That is such a bad joke. Anyway, so, you know, look, this shit happens on both sides. And it's nice to – not nice to see, but it's nice to see in this film where they kind of – they're fair about that. We'll put it that way. Kyle, are there any scenes specifically you want to talk about? Definitely we have to talk about all those, like, heavy-hitting Hoffman scenes. You mentioned the opening scene, too, with Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think all of our characters, I mean, we meet most of our heavy hitters, like, or all, I mean, all of our main characters, maybe except for Jeffrey Wright, within, like, close to, like, the first 10 minutes. And so, I mean, between Stephen prepping for, well, it's a debate between Pullman and Governor Morris, I mean, after that, pretty much we just get, like, some good stuff on the sides between Philip Seymour Hoffman and, his character's name is Paul, and then Stephen. And I think it just shows that world really well, and, like, they're having their side conversations, but then when Morris looks over, they smile and give a thumbs up. Like, it just feels very real to me. I think
job with that. As someone who has experienced that firsthand, it is incredibly real. I remember I was only a campaign manager once, but I was one of my big things was I had photography skills. So I would go everywhere and be the photographer for all the candidates. So I was there, and, you know, when you're on a campaign, when you're fighting against somebody, you're all going to the same places, right? You're all going to the same events and doing the same things. So you run into each other a lot, and there's always you on the other side, right? So it's always the same thing. It's like, we would have been the best of friends because we have the same interests and the same skill set, but he likes the other guy, so he's an asshole.
Yeah, so, we just put our faith into different people.
Yeah. You know, so it's like that interaction between Paul Giamatti and Philip Seymour Hoffman. I can definitely relate to that. That's very, very true. Of course, unfortunately for me, at being a Republican, my Democrat counterpart always had the upper hand because he was always surrounded by, you know, these beautiful college interns, and I had your typical average Republican voter, women over 50 around me. So it was a bit of a disadvantage. He may have gotten the better of that exchange. But
yeah, Democrats have better entourages, almost.
Well, everyone's got the entourage, just what they're, composed of. So I do like that little scene between Paul Giamatti and Philip Seymour Hoffman. First of all, I don't think they're in anything else, right, together?
No.
So these are two actors I really, really like, just having some banter. I'm sure they've even worked on some campaigns before, too. They're both Democrats. Because they mentioned even in the movie that how he knows him. Paul Giamatti kind of knows Philip Seymour Hoffman's character.
They work together.
Yeah, said that a lot. So, like, he knows how to play the situation, which turns out, like, to be one of the pivotal things of this film. They have great banter. So, but the scene that, I mean, I don't know if you wanted to play this scene, Kyle, but the scene, first Philip Seymour Hoffman scene I wanted to play was the one with Marissa Tomei.
Sure, yeah, let's go ahead and play that one. You've got Philip Seymour Hoffman, Marissa Tomei, and Ryan Gosling sitting around, and Marissa Tomei plays Ida Horowitz, and she's a reporter. Do we know exactly who she's a reporter for?
New York Times.
Is it the New York Times?
Yeah, she's at the Times.
Ah, yes.
Hey, it could be the Washington Times. Again, I highly doubt the Washington Times is covering a Democratic primary in Ohio.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so let's play that clip and we can talk about it.
Paul, tell me something I don't know. Tell me what's going to happen on the 15th.
Us by nine.
Well, so you're certain you're going to win here?
Certain, no, confident, yeah.
You just said you win by nine.
And I think that we will. St. Gabriel can blow his horn on election day and get his four horsemen to rig the ballot boxes for Pullman, and it wouldn't surprise me.
So you're saying there's a good chance you won't win?
Don't twist my words, Ida. What I'm saying is I'm not going to promise you we'll win. But he was decorated by Bush Sr. from the first Gulf War. He protested the second. He left his state with a balanced budget and the fourth highest education rate. The Republicans have no one out there that can touch this guy. So for this moment, this election, this primary is the presidential. And that, Ida, is the State of the Union.
Yeah, I mean, so we haven't seen these two, and we won't see them again together, unfortunately, but we saw them in Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
Yes, they were in much more closer...
Yes, very intimate in that film.
Very intimate, yeah.
I love it because it's like everybody there knows the exact game they're playing.
Well, I love it just because the scene starts with the song that plays at the end of Doctor Strangelove, so it's just like this crazy... There's a couple of great, like, early on foreshadowing moments. Even, again, the scene between PSH and Paul Giamatti, he's like, oh, I might have to steal him away from you. And then this, it begins with, like, this lovely guy playing piano on, you know, in the bar, playing, again, that ominous song when there's a bunch of nuclear bombs going off at the end of Doctor Strangelove. But, yeah, just, like, you get the inner workings. That's like the big, again, it was very realistic, and you get the inner workings of politicians and the media, I think, in a political race.
Well, also, I think it shows how, I think when you watch this movie, I think a lot of it is commenting on how our political system is. I think this is, you know, the writer's trying to say, you know, this is I think ultimately, if you want to get super deep here, they're trying to say with this movie, this is all bullshit. This entire system is bullshit, and this is how the media, you know, we like it's breaking, like, you kind of, I guess maybe you can tie it into the whole Ides of March thing. It's, you know, it's breaking down these clean institutions and revealing them for what they are. And, you know, you have the campaign manager, you know, constantly flirting with the New York Times, you know, reporter, and they both need each other. You know, it's like it's a mutual thing. They both really need each other, and they're super friendly on it. And it's just it's bullshit, you know. I guess maybe it's just not that's my politics shining through, but you know,
I hear you.
I mean, this again, I mean, also what like Charlie Wilson's War, I said this on Charlie Wilson's War episode, it makes me a bit, you know, and I'm saying this realizing it's a you know, a fiction, it's a narrative film, but it makes me, you know, just a very I don't know, nihilistic in a way of our process, but I don't, you know, but that's going by watching narrative films and not knowing anything really about our political system besides.
It kind of, it makes me love the process more, believe it or not. Like, this is so fascinating to me. Like, this movie, yeah, it's interesting.
Well, so are you,
because you're a dirty exactly. liberal, Brian. That's why you like it so much. No.
No, I agree that it's like fascinating, but that's different. I mean, to, you know, that's definitely, I will not deny that it's like fascinating, but to me it just makes me a little like, again, just discouraging. It's just like,
no, okay, look, the whole like candidate sleeping with an intern and her getting pregnant and getting an abortion and then essentially killing herself is not fascinating, and it's interesting like to watch as a movie, but I'm like, wow, I love politics now. But I love the game. It really reminds me of our last film, Moneyball. Like, just, like, you know, the polls are, like, the numbers, and just trying to angle things a certain way to overcome the odds.
It's a game. No, it's all a game.
Yeah, exactly.
Very much that way. I mean, that's just that way in Moneyball. They're talking about, like, good looks, and clearly it's, like, that's commented on this film, too, as far as your political candidates and George Clooney being a good-looking guy, you know, it all...
The one thing, you mentioned foreshadowing. There's like a scene where he goes on Charlie Rose, another name we're not supposed to talk about. But there's a scene where he goes on Charlie Rose, but he's getting his makeup done first. And if you notice, he's kind of being flirty with the makeup girl.
Oh, yeah.
The first time you watch, you just think he's just like in it, because he's like asking Ryan Gosling, and I forgot. I'm sorry, but I don't remember the other actor's name there, but I've seen him in other things.
Yeah, that actor, well, the character's name is Ben Harper, and then Max Minghella, I'll call him, Minghella. He was in The Social Network. He was one of the original ideas with the Winklevoss twins to come up with Facebook.
Yeah, okay, that's where I recognized him from. And the Clooney's character asks him if he has a girlfriend. He asks Ryan Gosling's character if he has a girlfriend, but it's kind of like on the second viewing or later viewings, you realize that he's like, he's not just like, you know, chumming it up. He's a freaking flirt.
I mean, when you think about it too, that's just, you know, that's, we always get like super shocked, like when, oh my God, the president had an affair with the intern. I mean, like this is a guy whose whole job is to charm people. Right? You know, it comes with the territory. That's just how he is.
Yeah, I mean, by the end of this film, when we see the new intern and she's an attractive young lady, I had it in my mind when I was, you know, rewatching it for this episode that there was even a little glance between her and Governor Morris, and there totally isn't, but that's like what this film does. It, like, at least for me, it just made me think, like, oh, there's the next one that's, you know, at least going to get hit on by him.
Well, the end is just like the beginning. That's what I love about that.
Yeah.
And that's what I was.
It's the same line with the second guy. The what's his name from The Social Network? He has like
Yeah, you're supposed to give me a phone. Yeah.
It's all going to happen again.
Which I don't really think it is.
George Clooney's going to screw all the interns.
But it's almost, yeah, like this is something that's happened. And then that's where the title is also good as well, because it's something that's clearly happened since the beginning of recorded history. Not like having sex with the interns, but we'll say political backstabbing and intrigue. And it's not going to change. No matter what system we have, there's always going to be politicking involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the final shot of the film when it's about to go live to Steven, there's even a, like, you kind of have doubt, like, is he just gonna spill the beans right now of just like everything that happened? He just looks like such a broken, you know, man at the end of just like, I mean, he says to, when Morris says, I wouldn't be able to work with you for the next 8 years, and he's like, let's not get ahead of ourselves, maybe just, you know, let's keep it to 4. But even at this point, I think Steven's just like, oh my God, like 4 years and I'm going to be like working in the White House, like with this guy, and just.
Well, here's the, I think also another interesting parallel to the name of the film, you know, like it goes, a big part of the play Julius Caesar is Brutus, right? Brutus is one of the big characters, you know, he's Caesar's friend, you know, Caesar pardoned him. They're very close, but for the greater good, he has to kill Caesar, right? So this is kind of an interesting parallel, is like, how did Brutus have to live with himself after he killed Caesar for the greater good? How does he have to live with himself after he blackmailed his idol and his ideal? You know, if we go down to our previous conversation, is, you know, he had to, like, you know, he's disenchanted. He's numb to it.
Yeah. I mean, he totally, between his, what he considered like his close friend in, Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, Paul, between betraying him, like he felt betrayed by Paul, but Paul was technically doing like that to me, I'm not saying it's not unbelievable, but that was like, I guess technically the weakest thing about the film is that Ryan got that Steven decided to go talk to Tom Duffy. Like, I understand he couldn't get, you know, in touch with Paul, but you just wait. Like, he's clearly, you know, he already, like, had told us as an audience, he's worked on more campaigns at his age than, like, than someone that's been in it for 20 years. A little weak plot-wise.
What scene are you referring to?
that he goes and decides to talk to Tom Duffy, to Paul Giamatti's character.
And has chicken wings.
Oh, okay. I mean, I didn't really see it that way, but...
I can see it's like just like a weak kind of like inciting incident, but, you know, yeah. Hey.
No, I think, again, I mean, that's obviously, this is me nitpicking, but I think it's for a very smart film, it just felt a little, again, for that character, because he's a bright guy with, like, his whole future ahead of him, and it just seemed like a pretty obvious, you know, and, I mean, the scene I want to play when he gets reamed out by Paul.
You know, I mean, I probably would have done the same thing in his shoes, only not because of like the reasons he cites. It's because, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Paul Zara was away.
He feels like
he's in charge of the campaign, and maybe he thinks he can get some kind of edge.
No, one way or another. I disagree. I think he feels important. And I think that's exactly what Paul Giamatti knows. He goes, this is a young guy, right? Now, I don't care how experienced you are. There's certain experiences you get that just don't come unless you have, you know, that have to come with age. And I think, I don't care how many times he's been around the block, this big figure comes in and wants to talk to you. You're going to be curious. It's out of the ordinary. So he goes. I didn't think it was like so like a big glaring, you know, error in the plot, but
I buy into that too.
Issues with the plot, and that's not really one of them.
Yeah, I don't say error with the plot. I think it's just,
but also
like that to me was the weakest element.
And I'm also gonna get all artsy again, and I promise I won't ramble on for 20 minutes. But it's kind of like this, Paul Giamatti is Cassius. You know, he's the guy who corrupts Brutus against Caesar, not in the literal sense. But you know he's the one who, you know, because in the play Julius Caesar, they not just like one of the first scenes is Brutus and Cassius meeting when they shouldn't be meeting and talking about, you know, Caesar and what they should do.
Yeah, no, I mean that's 100%. And if you realize, I mean, if you think about like that, this is the guy from House of Cards. It's obvious his Shakespeare influence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like 100% on that. So Kyle, what was the next scene you wanted to talk about?
I would love to play the scene where Steven gets fired. But I mean, leading up to that, I mean, you know, I think that's one of the more important things of this film is the relationship between Paul and Steven, and before then, we just get like a lot of great scenes just between Paul, the governor, and Steven, and especially that scene behind, like, you know, Steven letting Paul know, and I love, it's one of the best, just fantastic shots. There's some really, I'm not going to say that the cinematography is great in this movie, but there's a lot of great shots in this movie.
I love the cinematography. He's one of my favorites. He's the guy that Alexander Payne uses all the time. What's his name? Papa Michael? Yeah, he literally does The Descendants, I think, his next movie with George Clooney. So he's probably my favorite cinematographer, this guy. Like, not ever. Okay, currently working.
No, I'm just saying there's a handful of shots in this movie that I really like, and one of them is when they're speaking behind the American flag while George Clooney is on stage. And then there's just this final, like, wide shot of Ryan Gosling standing there by himself, like, in a silhouette behind this beautifully, you know, reverse side of the American flag. And that's when he decided to tell him that he went and he spoke to Tom Duffy.
Yeah, yeah. And that's great. And you honestly, at first, you think it's going to be okay. You know, not like okay, but you think, because he seems like Paul Zara is doing more like damage control about the situation, that it's not necessarily like going to lead to his...
He's more pissed than angry.
Yes.
Yeah, things are not going exactly the way they thought. They thought it was going to... Like, they had Senator Thompson, like, in the bag, but clearly, you know, Tom Duffy and Senator Pullman have been talking to him. What, they promised him Secretary of State, right?
Yeah, I love just like a little side note when they're talking to Clooney and they're trying to convince him to take it, and he's like, "What did he ask for? FDA chairman?"
Yeah, yeah. He was asking such like lower stuff. Like I would have thought he would have started guessing. Like
no, but he was kidding. He was like, you know, he was like, he knows he's like gonna gun for something more. He just that's how he values this guy. Like he just values him. Like you know, he hates him clearly.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and also if you got to put yourself in that guy and Philip Seymour Hoffman's mind is like his whole strategy hinged on getting this endorsement. He didn't get this endorsement. He comes back. He's pissed off because of that. And then he finds out that to him, Ryan Gosling stabbed him in the back. Right. So it's like shit on top of shit, you know?
Yeah, it's not going well, and you could tell this is a, you know, he's the kind of guy who he's obviously handled campaigns before, but he's still he reacts, you know.
Yeah.
So of course, this eventually leads to Ryan Gosling's firing.
Best scene in the whole movie, hands down.
Yeah, I think this was even when we had Joanna on a couple episodes ago. This was what she said. She just loved this scene in the movie. So you know what, let's play it for you, Hoff fans.
I leaked it to Ida. At the event.
I don't understand.
We made a deal.
Paul, they're gonna print that story in the paper tomorrow morning.
I know.
So why'd you do it? Why would you do that? Why would you do that to the campaign?
The campaign will survive.
Why would you do that to me?
Makes it easier to let you go.
What?
Why'd you meet with Duffy?
I made a mistake. I made a stupid...
No.
Mistake.
No, Stephen, you didn't make a mistake. You made a choice. You called me and left a message to call you back that it was important. And when I did, you told me to forget about it. You chose not to tell me. Why'd you make that choice?
Because, Paul, I didn't think it was important.
Oh, fuck yes, you did. But you went because you were curious, because you felt flattered, because you felt special. To think that Duffy wanted to speak to you instead of me? Because you thought to yourself, maybe I can get something out of this because it made you feel big? You know, the first campaign I ran is a tiny little race in Kentucky. State Senate seat, you know, working for some redneck nobody named Sam McGuthrie. No staff, no money, no fucking office. Everyone thought we didn't stand a chance. No way we can compete, right? And about this time, this guy running this congressional campaign a few districts over gives me a call. And he says, I really like what you're able to do for poor old Sam. But let's face it, he's a goner. Why don't you come work for me? What did I do? Well, Stephen, this is where you and I are different. I told Sam about the call. And Sam says to me, Paul, if you think this other guy's got a chance at winning and he can pay you more than anything I can afford, and if it's what you feel you need to do, then I won't get in your way. And I say, Sam, you took a chance on me and hired me when I was even more of a nobody than you are. So I'd be damned if I'm going to jump ship just because the shit hits the fan. We lost that race, but 3 years later when Sam decided to run for governor, who do you think he called? We won that race, and 20 years later I am where I am fucking now. Now, there's only one thing I value in this world, Stephen, and that's loyalty. And without it, you're nothing. And you have no one. And in politics, in fucking politics, it's the only currency you can count on. That's why I'm letting you go. Not because you're not good enough, not because I don't like you, but I value trust over skill. And I don't fucking trust you anymore.
It doesn't matter whether you trust me, Paul. It matters whether the governor does.
The governor already knows, and he thinks it's the right thing to do.
He does.
Yeah, and you know what? If I were you, I'd get a good night's sleep. because you're going to get fucking pounded by calls from the press in the morning.
I love just, like, again, this is just heavy set Philip Hoffman, and he's just sitting there
with that
his
cigarette.
Arms crossed, and then pulling out the pack of cigarettes, and that, you know, just then getting up and going on this. It's just a great. I mean, talk about like a scene that if you're like an actor that you want to go in and just like go in and try to like own a scene and just learn from somebody. This is one of those scenes.
Yeah, just the loyalty, or like poor old Sam.
I really the one thing I love, one, the performance was just spot on. It looks as if, and I think this is maybe what he was trying to go for, is like he has had to say this speech like a half a dozen times.
He's had to say it a lot more than he's wanted to.
Yeah, and I love. I mean, like I've worked in politics, and I get it. Loyalty is huge, and loyalty is so few and far between because the stakes are so high. You know, I've had people who were like are close. You know, when you're involved, right? There's a group of people you work with, and you are all committed to this cause and to this one thing, which is your candidate. And you're working, you know, you're going out at midnight because the other assholes took down all your signs. You got to put them up against. So, you know, day in, day out, you're working so hard. And then when you find out that somebody who's in that tight group just leaves, it just becomes, you know, loyalty is so important. And it's like the one, like, you know, Paul will, Philip Seymour Hoffman, his name is Paul, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul plays a game of bullshit, right? He weaves tales of bullshit. He goes through strategy. He fights the other guy, and he expects his people to have his back. And that's just something that's so critically important to him. He's incredibly jaded, but he relies on loyalty so much. So as soon as that is even hinted that it's gone, he has to dump him.
Yeah, I think you know, Ryan Gosling or Steven, you know, again, has like faith. Well, at this point, he's lost faith in the governor because he found out that he and Molly, and then right before this scene, he brought Molly to.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk about Molly a little later. Yeah.
But before all this, again, Steven just, you know, really believed that like Morris could almost like do no wrong. But, you know, Paul is just, he's been in it. Yeah, he's done it. He knows he's much more betrayed by, you know, his peer, you know, in Steven than the guy that he's running the campaign could ever do to him. He's expecting like a politician to just go ahead and be a politician, but for his, you know, his peer, and almost, you know, again, like he has like this mentor role to Steven. And as we learned in that, you know, that he had a mentor and decided to, you know, stay with him in that campaign, and then he repaid him later on. I mean, that was a political figure, but anyway,
it reminds me of Charlie Wilson's War, the story that Charlie Wilson tells about how he first like helped a guy get elected. And that's when like he believed in democracy. This is almost like the reason that Paul Zara believes in these campaigns. Like he's just, it's loyalty to him.
It's loyalty, and then in the end, like it's just like in these moments where he's just, you know, BSing with people and then just in the muck of it all, it's just for this to happen, it's just a very, you know, brings low morale, I think. So,
and I think loyalty is so, like, you know, Paul is a character who's willing to fall on the sword for the cause, right? You know, his is his goal, and he's going to do anything against it, and that's what he's focused on. Like when it eventually comes out and Ryan Gotham's able to, you know, backstab him, he takes it like a man. You know, he tells Chris Matthews, oh, it was a mutual decision, right? You know, he doesn't freak out. He doesn't do what Ryan Gosling does.
100%.
I love
he has more integrity.
Definitely. I love the slow push into when he steps into the governor's SUV.
Yep.
And you think, like, you're just going to hear him go, like, what the fuck? You know, like, but...
He knows
just,
it's coming. He knows
it's coming, and it's just silence, and it's just, like, this very climatic, you know, like... tense, suspenseful music, and then he steps out, and the SUVs pull away, and then, like you said, then he's talking to Chris Matthews, and then the next scene we have with him after that is just, like, him being normal. I know he's not, I mean, it's outside of a funeral. And
yeah, no, and well, I want to play, also, I want to play that scene later.
Yeah.
He is so, how can I put it? He, like you said, Dan, this is a game, and he knows exactly how the game is played. So yeah. When he finds it out, he's not necessarily shocked or anything. He's curious, but he
feels betrayed. Like the one thing that last scene when he's going in there, he's not angry, he's not upset, he's just disappointed. Right when he's taught, like, did you ever see a great parallel to that scene is the famous movie Double Indemnity? You ever see Double Indemnity?
No, I haven't.
Well, it's a great film noir movie, Fred McMurray and Edward G. Robinson. This was his, like, best friend, and he's just disappointed and disgusted. And you can tell that, but he doesn't have to show it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. So, I mean, like you mentioned, that last scene we get with him is at the funeral. But before we get really into the nitty-gritty of that scene, because I also enjoy that scene, I want to talk about Evan Rachel Wood's character, Molly. Well, first of all, what did you guys think of her performance? What did you guys think of her character or that arc in general?
I had no opinion. She's a plot device. No, but I think this, if, like, I'm not one to judge about, like, stereotypes and going off and on about that stuff. Like, I really could care less. But I feel like her character was so, they wrote her so one-dimensional, you know? She had one purpose, was to serve as the blackmail. And I think that was, like, a bit kind of, something I wish there was, her character was a bit more fleshed out.
Yeah, that to me is my biggest criticism of the film. I think she does a really great job with what they give her. I actually like her a lot as an actor. But I think, like, to me, it's one of these things, and Kyle, we've talked about this a lot, is, you know, something bad, usually sexual, happening to a woman serving as, like, the main plot device of a film.
That came up with Joanna for Jack Goes Boating, and we've seen it in plenty of other films we cover for this podcast, and just, you know, films in general. I get one-dimensional. I agree with both of you. What, you know, it's one-dimensional, but she does a, you know, very good job for the role that she's given. I think they tried to spice it up by making her father, the head of the DNC, right?
So yeah.
There's a bit more. It's but not she, like she's just.
But
some,
she's her father's only the head of the DNC, is so that you can say later on that Paul has that great scene. It just, the only reason that he's the head of the DNC is so that we can kind of add that extra bit of drama to Paul and Steven's last scene. That's the only reason. I don't think it's like spicing it up. It's like, you know, oh, I got her the internship.
No, just it's like, just. It's just definitely it adds more towards than like that scene between Paul and Steven, but it gives us a little bit more, I think, just understanding besides just saying, oh, my parent, I mean, even though, I mean, so they're Democrats, but they're, I mean, they're Catholics and conservatives, and like in that retrospect that they don't believe in abortion. But they were trying. I'm not saying they accomplished it, but they're just by, you know, then having him speak at the funeral.
I wonder how ties
into Morris.
I wonder how the play, her character is in the play. This isn't a movie. It's not going to pass the Bechdel test here. There's only two. There's only two women who speak in this film, I believe. Unless there's, like, some intern who throws a line somewhere. But there's only two women with speaking roles, which is the candidate's wife and her. And they're both romantically involved with the candidate.
Well, and also...
Ida. Ida, of course, Ida.
And also to point out that, basically, her character is repeated at the end, right? Like,
yeah.
Whatever the other intern's name is. It's like she's a plot device. That's her role in the movie.
And Kyle, even Ida, like, offers sexual favors at one point.
Yeah. Between her and, I think, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
So for like, yeah, it's not the best when it comes to that. But again, I really think that Evan Rachel Wood, with what she was given, does a good job. So, okay, so let's get to this final scene, which, again, like, Dan, you were talking about it a little, we were touching on it. I just love that line, like, you know, what is it, like, maybe...
Yeah, maybe one day you can tell me.
Yeah, one day we can grab a beer and you can tell me what you had on the governor.
And this is after he reveals that he got her the internship.
Yeah. Right?
So there's a little bit of extra, like, oh my god, I really... Not only did I stab this guy in the back twice, I killed his friend's daughter. Yeah,
it really is. It's Ryan Gosling not picking up the cell phone that led her to believe that he was going to, you know, go ahead and say how.
Well, he was. He went to Paul Giamatti and threw it out on the table.
Yeah, that's something we skipped over, and that's something I did want to just briefly mention, how he just storms into the rival campaign office like he's going to own the place. He's like, I got everything. And he was going to spill. So in Molly's whole arc, she ends up... Do we think it's actually a suicide? I think they're heavily implying it.
Almost positive. Oh, definitely, it's a suicide, yeah.
So she ends up killing herself because she's afraid that Gosling's character is going to, you know... blow this whole thing up and you know, use her again. And then, look, in her shoes, you'd believe that too. But it's not, he's not innocent. He was actually going to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I think the following scene after this, where he's just looking dead inside, you know, I hate to be the artsy one again and bring back the whole Ides of March Caesar theme, but in a way, more so than George Clooney, Philip Seymour Hoffman is the Caesar, you know?
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Like, at some points you get, I feel like he is.
Yeah, who's the one who's really betrayed? It's him. You're right. He's the only,
I wouldn't say honest. He's not an honest character, but he's
because he does a double cross.
He's true to his ethic. Right.
And honestly, it's him and Ida, in a way, are both true to, like, what they do, you know? They're both, I think, she's a journalist, and she will, like, go ahead and get any story she wants and print it. Like, she doesn't have, I guess, maybe ethics when it comes to, to that, but, I mean, she is just doing her job in the end of the day. But, yeah, I'd say, you know, Paul... definitely he's doing his job to the best capability he can, and to, like, what he, you know, to his ethical and, like, moral code.
Yeah, in this seedy world of back dealing and, you know, the stuff with the media, he seems like a guy with a code, and that's, like, rare. We think Morris is the guy with the code, but I mean, obviously he might have it in all the other factors, but he did a very bad thing.
Yeah, I love Paul saying, like, to Stephen right away, like, look at you all grown up, tits and all.
Yeah, oh, it's, God, I love that line, too.
Just, like, he just says it, he says everything in such a dry and frank kind of way. And then, you know, and then he's going to go to, what, K Street and make a million a year or whatever. And he's like, you know, and no one to fuck you over. Like, yeah. he just says it so perfectly, and so, like, but then at the same time, like, every one of his words is, like, almost a knife being plunged into Steven. Like, it's just, I mean, I'm so happy because Ryan Gosling is, like, one of my favorite actors, and so the fact that they got to share so many scenes together, that was awesome.
Yeah, so this is a movie that, I was a little surprised. Well, okay, when we look at the pantheon of Philip Seymour Hoffman's career, I don't know if it's in that top level of what people consider, but I think it's in that level right under. But it has no Oscar nominations for acting. The only nomination is for the screenplay. By the way, 84% on Rotten Tomatoes with critics, which is pretty good. 73% with audiences, liked it a little bit less. But I said it's, like, one of my favorite films, and one of my favorite Hoffman films, frankly. It's... like I said, it's not in maybe the top five of what people say are his films, but it's certainly in that second class. I would say most people have that consensus with his performance. Do you guys agree? Disagree?
No, I agree in the sense it. I mean, as far as when it goes to like the questions that we ask when we have like first time guests on, you know, whether it's a favorite film of yours of his or it's a favorite role of his, like it seems like both. You know, obviously, you say that both of those, you know, are true. I could see much more how this is would lean towards like someone's favorite role than someone's favorite movie of his. Or actually, I don't know. It might be 50-50 on that because it's just it's like a role of his that he's really good in, but he's not, you know, the star of the show.
But I think, like we've said, this is where he just does. It's similar to his Charlie Wilson's War role. This is where he does so good.
Let me kind of my opinion on this movie is. If it's on TV, I'm going to watch it. I'm not buying the DVD.
That's second tier, then. You are like the consensus.
Yeah. I like the movie. I like Philip Seymour Hoffman, but he's not a big enough part of the movie, right?
No, but just, I guess, from our point of view and the how we've analyzed all these things, we've seen him do everything at this point. Star, like be like a little cameo role and everything in between. Like this is not, he's great as the star, but this is where it seems like he's having the most fun, I guess. It seems like he's just really sinks into a character when it's like he's a pivotal side character.
Definitely.
So is there anything else you guys maybe wanted to address or talk about for the Ides of March?
Pretty good. I like it. I dig it. It's definitely, you know, as someone who's kind of like into politics, it was a refreshing political movie. I think in the beginning, I was a little like my first viewing. I recall I was like, oh, it's gonna be another bullshit story, right? Because you have that one setup scene with Marissa Tomei, and she goes, "Oh, you're such an idealist." You know, it's like I thought it would be one of those things where you break down the idealist type deal, right? That would, that eventually did happen, but it was a nice story. Cool, great acting. Again, I'd watch it on TV. I'm not going to buy the DVD, but I enjoyed it.
You've got a bit of a, you know, for someone that grew up in like Western Jersey, you've got like a Jersey accent sometimes, Dan. You got like a Gosling.
It comes in. Maybe I've watched
you're
it
like,
too much.
Yeah, you know, one.
I'm also on my 16th cup of coffee, so I think the Jersey comes out a little bit more.
Are you?
And like, I didn't grow up in Western Jersey. I grew up in Clifton, New Jersey. I was 5 minutes outside of Patterson.
In the political machine.
Yeah.
Not away from it. Do you consider yourself the Ryan Gosling of Central Pennsylvania now?
I wouldn't go that far, but I think I'm a little bit too chubby to be Ryan Gosling, and the chubby Ryan Gosling's already been taken.
Oh yeah, but man,
you can be the chubby Ryan Gosling of again whatever area
of Central PA.
Kyle,
I am the chubby Ryan Gosling of Lancaster County.
Kyle, will you give him franchise rights?
Sure.
So, Kyle, anything else you want to talk about with Ides of March? Or?
No, I mean it's just. A great role of his, and Paul Giamatti is just awesome in this movie.
We didn't give him enough talking to. He was great.
Yeah,
Paul Giamatti's great. Period.
He deserves his own podcast. Honestly,
like, yeah, he'd be really fun to talk about. But I love the scene between
you guys are almost done with the Hoffman series then.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to do another actor after this.
But he'd be a great guy to do something on, for sure. Like, just his, like, he's a guy who paid his dues, so to speak, too, you know? He had, like, little bit parts and then started doing, like, kicking ass. But we would have to talk about John Adams, just, you know? Like, I know it's not a feature film, but we would have to talk about it.
Yeah.
Were you going to mention something about him in the film, Kyle?
I was just going to say, I mean, it's great that he and Philip Seymour Hoffman got to share a little screen time together. Obviously, his bigger moments were with Ryan Gosling, but it was just fun because I consider them to be, you know, very much like in the same class of actors, you know, just like very much like peers. They have a lot of similarities just as far as I think they're
Giamatti and Hoffman or Giamatti and Gosling.
Giamatti and Hoffman.
Okay, yeah, I know. I agree. I 100% agree.
Sorry. Now Paul Giamatti. Now there's the chubby Ryan Gosling.
Now he's a little, he's like the chubby George Clooney.
Fair. Paul Giamatti's father was former baseball commissioner. Last week we had a baseball movie. What do we have next week, Kyle?
Next week we have The Master.
The Master, one of your favorite films. I haven't seen it in a long time. I'm excited to see it again because again, it's a polarizing film. Not a lot of people like. I mean, not okay. A lot of people like it, and a lot of people don't like it. We'll put it that way.
I love The Master, man. That's Lank.
I know.
That's never mind.
You're gonna make a Lancaster joke?
No, never mind.
It's Lancaster, all right? Lancaster, not Lancaster.
Lancaster
is that little slum in northern England, all right? Lancaster is the heaven where the corn stalks. No, we don't have corn. What do we got here?
Sheep.
There's grain. Chocolate. I'm right by Hershey.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
Everyone. Actually, there's very unpleasant thing is in the summer, they fertilize a lot of the fields with the cocoa pods left over from the Hershey factory. I'm in Elizabethtown, and they make Three Musketeers here.
Wait, is that where the film Elizabethtown by Cameron Crowe, which was supposed to be pretty bad, is from?
Probably not. There's not much here. But
I'm going to look that up.
Look it up. Google it. I'm every so often there's a big heavy smell from the Hershey's chocolate factory,
and it's not a good thing. It's not.
No, it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. But unfortunately, that's like once out of every like 60 days, and then the other 59, it smells like cow shit. But you get used to it after a while. You know?
Sounds like a fun place.
The smell of Penn State bullshit.
No, it smells like actually. It's right next. My campus is right next to a farm, so it smells like cow shit sometimes.
Manure.
Still, really nice people. The nicest people in the world. I went to Wendy's the other day, and I pull in and I give the guy my money, and he gives me my food, and he goes, "Have a blessed day, sir." And
wow!
I go, holy shit!
So we always ask our guests like where they can follow. You or where they can find you. Clearly at the Wendy's.
And you're gonna cut all that out, right? We're not gonna include any of this. These are my neighbors, please.
Okay.
What?
My name is Joe. I do not live. No. You can. There's no real way to follow me. My Twitter handle is @DanExpoShell. I don't really tweet. I don't work for myself anymore, so I kind of gave that up.
Are you gonna look into Pennsylvania politics?
Maybe. I made a turn. Right, I'm a little disgusted with politics as is because you know the Democrats are vile neo Marxists and the Republicans are obnoxious. So I joined the local Libertarian Party of Lincoln.
Wow! So you'll never make it in politics again.
Well, it's like I spent my entire life as a Republican in New Jersey. So
I thought you were a Democrat coming into college.
I was a Democrat coming into college, but I spent most of my life was after college. We don't count those first 18 years.
Those are voting years.
I was really, hey, listen, I was a big Hillary Clinton fan in the original 2008 run.
Wow.
That's
because I was young and stupid, you know.
Come on.
and also John McCain. Come on. Let's be real here. But I spent most of my adult life as a Republican in New Jersey, so I figured what could be harder than that? A Libertarian in rural Pennsylvania.
So. You like a good challenge, Mr. Pushell.
Yeah, I like a good challenge. You know, it's fun.
100%.
And also being a Libertarian, you know, you get to be a lot more angry and a lot more cynical, right?
And you know you're not playing to win. You're just
you've already isolated yourself. So
you're playing to sit back and say, "Oh, I told you so."
Exactly. So just some correction things. Elizabethtown in that film that no one watched by Cameron Crowe is in Kentucky, not the one you were in. Also, next week I believe we have Danny Kim.
Yes, he's one of Brian and I's oldest friends, and he's worked in photography, so just figured as our one of our characters is a photographer, figured that'd be fun, bring him on. And he loves the film.
He's a big fan of the director as well.
Yes.
So as always, you can check out all the great shows, including Boyfriend Material, which is the Ryan Gosling show, on cageclub.me, cageclub.me. This show as well, of course, and the other, again, the pantheon of great Cage Club shows. So Dan, once again, thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure to have you. You always bring the nice political and today historical and theatrical and amazing, amazing perspective. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you. And stay cool.
Thank you, Dan.
also, just on another note, we're getting that around that time of year. Beware the Ides of March.
Ah.
You see what I did there?
I like that. Beware the Ides of March, guys. Where did you come from, baby? How did you know I needed you? How did you know I needed you so badly? How did you know I'd give my heart gladly? Yesterday, I was one of the lonely people. Now you're lying close to me, making love to me. Sex a thing, you. I believe in miracles. Since you came along, you sex a thing.